another intriguing edition of the Stack Pack. Perhaps you can help solve a mystery. I was doing my impression of that terrible, like, TikTok robot voice that everybody uses for all the videos.
Yeah. It's just speech enabled.
The voice creeps me out. I'm sure it's amazing. It's got to be great for people that are, like, blind and stuff, but the voice creeps me out.
You know what else creeps me out? This motel resident.
Oh. Motel resident.
Oh, we're going to talk about her, baby.
Oh, my gosh.
And what did you call him? Asian Harry Potter?
Lots of Asian kids. Oh, I've got so many questions. We got to just jump into it. Yeah, so first off, we have to let everybody know that it's December 1992 in the world of our podcast. It's Christmas. We're celebrating Christmas 92 today on the pod. It's season 5, episode 14 of the original Unsolved Mysteries, hosted by the great Robert Stack. Watch it on YouTube. Watch it on IMDb TV via Amazon Prime, blah, blah, blah. Watch it on Tubi. I'm sure it's other places.
Oh, the good old days when gasoline only cost 18 cents a gallon.
Was it 18? I thought it was 80.
I don't know. It's something ridiculously cheap compared to right now.
Oh, you guys caught a gas sign? I must have missed that.
Right now, you can't even get it.
Dude, I watched a TikTok video of a lady filling garbage bags up with gasoline.
Garbage bags?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Damn, I wonder what Facebook post she got that
really
from.
I really hope that bag ripped open in her trunk on the way home.
Oh my God, that's terrible. There's a reason why they sell gas cans.
Right? Invest $5. Put your gallon in something safe.
Jeez.
So, yeah, like I said, it's Christmas 92. The gas prices are cheap. Bush Senior is the president.
Oh, yeah. We all love Bush. Love me some Bush.
What else happened in 1992?
Wild Bush or trimmed Bush?
Wild. Oh, baby. I like that native.
Oh, man. I remember my grandpa, when I was like a little kid, he showed me he used to get like emails, like in the early days of email. And it was literally like ladies with their, that rose their skirt and said, vote Bush. And you could just see their pubic hair.
It's not like these girls today who are waxed, vaxxed, and waiting for their income tax.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be, Bush or no Bush, man. If you're a George W. Bush, I think I'll pass. If you're a fan of George W., the sweetest war criminal that we've ever had is our president. Anyway, I guess they're all war.
I don't know why we're laughing. That's not funny.
No, lots of people died. Just kidding. Okay, yeah. So 92, Cold War is going on. Jurassic Park is about to be in theaters. Wrong.
I think Jurassic Park was 94. What happened in 92? Shit.
Just one movie. I'm trying to think of one movie that I know for a fact came out in 92, and I can't. Oh, it's pissing me off. Like, I feel like that's a year. That's a year. That existed, right? There's no
it
Matrix.
It definitely existed. Hook? So we got, ooh, Batman Returns.
Oh, of course. God damn it. Oh,
my cousin Vinny. The ultimate Christmas movie, right?
Yeah, my favorite Christmas movie, Batman Returns.
My cousin
Vinny. It came out in May.
Encino Man. Reservoir Dogs. Did it really?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember Batman Returns. I don't remember it coming out in May.
That's
weird.
It's dumb.
A little weird.
It came out in May. It was filmed for Christmas.
Should have been 91, Christmas time. So, fun fact, my mom used to take me out of school early to watch all the Batman movies with Michael Keaton. And actually later also Val Kilmer and George Clooney. It was like our thing the first day it came out.
Batman Returns is, it's amazing that movie exists because it is so gross and perverted and fucking weird. It's awesome.
Basic Instinct. I just was watching a video today about the worst movies to come out in the last 20 years. And apparently they did a Basic Instinct sequel for some reason with Sharon Stone, like 16 years later, did not do well.
Oh, she came back? What was the other movie you said that came out in 92?
My Cousin Vinny, Encino Man, Reservoir Dogs.
Reservoir Dogs, yeah, that's another.
Three Ninjas?
Classic. Oh, the original Three Ninjas. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Rocky loves Emily. Rocky loves Emily.
It's a great movie. I love when they put laxatives in the bad guys' cokes and they poop. Oh, do they poop?
Oh, do they poop?
Oh, do those stumbling 90s idiots poop? And the and I always remember how the Coke looked kind of milky, but still like carbonated. Ooh. Mm-hmm. That's a hilarious movie.
A League of Their Own also came out in 92.
Okay. This is this vastly diverged.
I like a drunk Tom Hanks as coach.
Okay, so yeah, like I said, Christmas 1992, and this first case, we'll just jump right through it because it's real sad. But then it's not. I don't know. We're going to talk about patron saints of finding your keys and shit like that.
Patron saints of finding your keys?
Even at Christmas time, it is easy to doubt the possibility of miracles unless you believe you have experienced one. The McGivern family of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, never imagined that they would be chosen to receive such a gift. Their remarkable story began during the Christmas season 10 years ago, on the day 7-year-old Chucky McGivern came home early from school with a case of the chicken pox.
And it only gets progressively worse from there. The day later, he loses consciousness, slips into a coma, and they have to take him to the hospital where he has a swollen brain. And the hospital are able to get him stabilized after a while. The mom talks about how he looked like he was dead. She talks about his hard skin.
She mentions
and that he was cold and pure white.
She also mentions a bolt sticking out of his head multiple times, which is like, damn, we're like, when the fuck did that happen?
Well, they probably had to like go in and I don't know. They did something in his brain. I don't know. It's crazy. What he had was called Reye's syndrome.
Yeah, is that still a thing?
I'm really bothered when doctors say, honestly, I need to tell you this. Like, all right, if you're telling me honestly now, like, when the fuck have you been lying to me?
Been lying to you.
Yeah, that's probably right, just that. That's actor speak. That's an ad lib. Or it's just like the doctor on Arrested Development. Just the worst at giving news.
I need to be honest with you. Like, oh, shit, you've been lying to me this whole time? Fuck.
So Reye's syndrome's a super rare disease, and apparently it affects the nervous system, the brain, and the liver. And they honestly told the parents that there was a slim chance he'd survive. And they said even kids that do have brain damage. It's also very unique to children. I didn't specify that, but it's something that only happens to kids. So Nancy and Chuck Sr. just pretty much moved into the hospital. Family members came and went, and they would give them religious medals and trinkets and, you know, help them pray. And one cousin or somebody gives the mom a St. John Newman, who was the patron saint of vocations. This cousin gave the mom a medal that had St. John Newman. And he talks about how he got in a car crash in Italy and he thinks he wouldn't have survived if it wasn't for that. So
yeah, that the pendant or whatever gave him good luck.
Yeah. And a little bit about St. John Newman. He died in 1860. He was the fourth Archbishop of Philadelphia and he's considered the first American male saint because he, did his thing in America. In 1923, there's a little girl who there are reports that somebody put a pendant of St. John on her, like by her bed, and she was cured of peritonitis.
What have I heard that before? What is peritonitis? I've heard that.
It's I looked it up, but only for the spelling, and I didn't read it. I don't know. I was like, I want to read about a disease. Disease is scary. So Nancy pins. So with all this information, Nancy pins the relics right by her son's head. You know, thinking that it's a brain syndrome, so put it by the head. And they also say they weren't really religious either. They did start going to church and praying hard. You know, and all this stuff happened at little Chucky. But it didn't help at first. His lungs had collapsed, and the pneumonia had set in. Really bad. The mom even overheard nurses saying that he wasn't going to make it. And that really broke her heart. Until the St. John pendant, little mysteries started happening. The mom went in one day and the St. John pendant was faced the other way, which was weird.
So yeah, that is weird.
She had to unpin it and like move the little keychain up, like physically take it off so it would be facing the other way. And when she left and came back again, it was back facing the pillow. So she thought that was a little odd. And then later she found someone had taped a picture of St. John Newman himself, like just in the room, and she couldn't figure out who did it. Nobody admitted to it.
Yeah, nobody. Yeah, that was weird too.
And then this is where the creepy, spooky boy comes in to play. The whole family's waiting in the waiting room.
And, Asian Potter?
Yeah. They're all chilling, waiting in the waiting room when a boy walks in and just kind of like looks at the family. The whole family just stands there and looks, and then kind of at the end, he kind of gives a smile. And then he leaves. And then later the nurses tell the dad that a boy came in to visit Chucky. They were like, how'd you even get in here? Because he was in one of the more secure wings of the hospital. And he was just like, I just wanted to see Chucky. And he kind of ran off. And the doctor that chased him, in the reenactment at least, he was nowhere to be seen. And then comes in Father Robert Roncase. Fun name. And he heard about this boy and how sick he was, and he just felt that he had to give him the sacrament of the sick, which I guess is his, like, final rites, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess he must have been really bad for him to, like, I'm guessing the hospital called and keeps...
Well, he says that he, like, read about it. He heard about it, and he came immediately. Like, he just felt like he had to come. Huh. But maybe that's just a better story. I don't know. Yeah, and I guess somebody allowed him to do it. And he explains that he felt an overwhelming presence of a spirit when he was praying over the boy. And then soon after, the boy started to get better. Like in one day, he went from like straight coma to like sitting up talking to people. And he talked about these dreams, and he said there was a lot of Asian kids in his room, giving him all sorts of different presents. But at the in the middle was one. Harry Potter looking boy who was kind of at first I thought he was handing him like a small saw, and I was like, oh no, it's like a bow and arrow that he's like handing the little boy.
Here's
it looked like a small like handsaw.
Cut yourself free.
I was like, fuck, they're putting him to work. And yeah, the dream kids are like giving him presents and stuff. They're giving presents to the dream child. He described the boy in his dream being his best friend. Like he felt that it was his best friend and that he was giving him strength and stuff. And the creepiest part of this episode is when the little ghost boy says, everything is going to be all right, Chucky. And it's kind of like weirdly low for like a little kid.
Yeah.
It's freaking creepy.
Everything is going to be all right, Chucky.
Yeah,
you sure this is supposed to be like an angel, not a demon?
It's like a dream child. I thought we were getting into some Freddy Krueger territory.
You're gonna give me your soul, Chucky.
Yeah, the Chucky comes back. Yeah, this is like another origin. Could have been another origin for Chucky.
It could be.
Everything's gonna be alright, Chucky. I know.
The doctors were just amazed that someone so gravely ill, as Robert Stack says, could recover so fast. Weeks later, they go back to the hospital and he gets a checkup and they pretty much give him a clean bill of health. They're like, it's like nothing happened.
Yeah. And they didn't know what they didn't know. They just had no explanation.
Right. So they later, I guess they're like, thanks Saint, which is so funny.
Hey, thanks,
I don't know.
Asian Harry Potter.
It's just like, I don't know. To me, they're like, thanks, Saint. So they go to the shrine of St. John Newman in Philadelphia. And when they're looking around, the boy finds a picture and he's like, that's my best friend. And it was St. John Newman as a child. And yeah, that shit is crazy. So they're convinced that St. John Newman came in boy form and like saved their boy.
Yeah, because if he came as a man, that'd be weird, right?
I don't know. I guess, yeah, I guess I would have been, a creepy man standing by your bed. I wouldn't feel like he was my best friend, but if, like, it was a kid.
Well, I mean, in the Catholic Church, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
That's kind of normal.
Who knows? I also just want to say that, like, you know, the saint saved Chucky. The doctors did absolutely nothing. No one's like, oh man, we hugged the nurses. You know, they did such a beautiful job with our Chucky. No one says any of that shit. The doctors worked tirelessly. You know, nope. It was a freaking pendant.
I guess, well, we don't even talk to any of the doctors, but I guess from what the family says, the doctors had no explanation as to why he got better. So
no, yeah, that's true.
So I don't know. But who knows? We don't know what his medical records look like. They could have given him something that made him better, but they don't talk about it.
What was the purpose of this segment? Is Chucky like trying to reunite with the Archbishop? You know,
they don't say. I think they're just saying that it's a Christmas miracle.
Yeah, this is just one of those like unexplainable. Yeah, yeah, it's not much of a mystery, but I did think it was interesting because it did have like a kind of like emotional ghost story vibes, like a little bit. I don't know. It's a little too Jesus-y for my taste. If I was turning it into a script for Guillermo del Toro, I'd change the saint out to like a, you know, something cooler, like John Wilkes Booth's ghost.
Or
it's so terrible.
When he wakes up, he's not Chucky. He's someone else.
Oh, he's the doll Chucky. Oh, he's been saving these kids in hopes of changing bodies with the kids, but it never works out. So they find out that little saint, the saint is actually kind of Saint the John villain of the piece.
Is actually it's actually Saint John, but he's been trying.
He was a fucking rapist in the 1800s. He raped and murdered all these children, and he's been trying to fucking inhabit the body of one of these kids for hundreds of years, ever since, for 100 years.
And they finally got him.
Dude. No one believes Nancy, the mom. Nobody believes her, but she knows. She knows that this ghost that she keeps seeing is trying to steal her baby.
There you go, dude.
This summer.
You need to write that script, brother.
Sunday, February 28th, 1988, 9 p.m. Firefighters in Odessa, Texas, were called to the scene of an untended trash fire in the parking lot of an abandoned bar. Within minutes, they discovered that in reality, they had been called to the scene of a grisly murder. Buried in the ashes was a charred body of a man who had been beaten and shot twice in the back before being set afire.
So this next case we're going to be talking about is a wanted case, and it's kind of those, it's like a story that's just, it's like they're just telling you a case that's already solved, but this guy was missing, so they couldn't charge him. But it's just like, you know, they go over the meticulous details of how this dude murdered this other dude, right? And we're just
like, oh, and it was clearly him, for sure. I mean, there was no other suspects. They were together. Multiple people saw them. Multiple people saw him by himself after they didn't see the old man. So anyways, this is about Neil Jennings.
Good old Neil Jennings, right? 59 years old. February 28th, 1980.
But if you ask me, well, I'll tell you at the end.
All right. So yeah, this one.
You asked me, Neil had it coming.
This one starts a trash fire in a parking lot in 1988. They think it's just an unattended fire, and they find the body of Neil Jennings, like we said, 59 years old. He had been hanging out with a weird dude named Bill Roberts, and a couple days before the body's found, February 26th, they had stopped by Neil's brother's house just outside of Dallas, and they were showing him like Neil's latest project, which was this like sweet hot rod they were working on. And he said that the 2 months ago he had hired Bill to help him with the finishing touches on this car, and that he had been paying him $50 and letting him kind of stay at his house.
$50 a week, he said.
Yeah, and we're talking 1988. I don't know, dude. Seems crazy. Do you think they were banging?
$50 a week, 80 cents, 80 cents a day.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Fuck.
80 cents a day.
Wait, that can't be right. 80.
Oh no, 80 cents an hour. I did 80 cents an hour.
Oh damn, that's some crazy math.
That's still terrible.
It was like
80 cents an hour. If he worked, that's assuming that he worked 8 hours.
No wonder he killed him.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. He had it coming.
So that Friday, they drove through the desolate, barren, what do they say? The barren Texas prairie. They drive 300 miles from where they were outside of Dallas to Odessa. And they check in at a motel at the very edge of the city. Well, Odessa's not really a city. It's more of like an oil hell.
Yeah. Actually, so it's about $7 and 15 cents a day.
Ooh, you can almost get yourself a number one combo at McDonald's for that.
Well, yeah, and today in El Paso where it's kind of cheap.
And that's almost. Yeah, this guy's getting screwed, basically.
So they check into a hotel, and that's the last time anybody sees Neil, is when they check into this hotel.
But you forgot to mention that Neil mentions to his brother that he doesn't have enough money to pay Bill.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Damn. You don't have $50 to rub together to pay this poor man who he's been having him work on his brother's and vehicle.
And live.
And he has no money to pay the dude. Everybody's spending all that money watching Reservoir Dogs.
So in enters this new character named Jack. Now, the only thing we're told about Jack is that he actually kind of murdered Neil pretty good because he introduced Bill to Neil, right?
I mean, yeah, I guess.
You're complicit, Jack.
Well, yeah, it says that he was – they definitely were introduced and they were mutual friends. So I guess. Yeah.
So he shows up at Jack's house. He lies about Neil's whereabouts. He says that he dropped him off at his old lady's house, I think is what he says in the reenactment.
And Jack says that he is sweaty. He was kind of frazzled and sweaty. And
he's at some lady friend's house doing dinner or something.
Yeah.
Old frazzled Bill.
Oh, yeah, getting dinner or something. Yeah, that's right. So Bill asks Jack for a jump start. He's like, my truck's fucked. I need a jump start. And then it's weird. He's like, sure, I'll give you a jump start. But then they say that he slept in his truck in back of Jack's car. This is where we start to notice that he's putting the truck behind buildings and trying to keep it out of sight. So Neil lets him sleep in the truck in his backyard.
Oh, and he also has a tarp.
Jack knows the next morning.
Yeah,
Bill's got a tarp in the next morning.
Yeah, well, I guess in the light of day, that's when he starts to notice Jack's looking out his window. He sees the tarp, and he sees that Bill's paying close attention to it and looks slightly perturbed at what might be in.
Which it makes sense that he's sleeping in the truck because he wants to be close to make sure nobody sees what's in the back.
Yeah. So later that day, he tries selling off Neil's truck at the crappy motel. They won't touch it. They're like, it's nice, but it's not worth $1,200. And I think they were lying, too. I think they were just like, oh, just tell this weird guy whatever.
What were they doing at that motel? Like, when they did that reenactment, it looked like just a stack of batteries in the back of a pickup truck.
It also just looked like, what do you think the motel does, Bill? They don't have pickaxes, and they don't have. They're not going to buy your truck. What the fuck do you think a motel is?
We can let you crash here. We got a room if you pay, but no, we don't want your shitty truck.
You don't buy trucks,
so
you don't lend out pickaxes or shovels. What kind of motel is this?
This ain't the Holiday Inn.
Clearly, a motel that's on the up and up.
He asked the motel people if he could park in the back like he did with Jack's house, and then he asks for a shovel and a pickaxe because he's gonna fix some lady's water line. Sure.
This guy sucks at lying, man.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, and they're like, we don't have anything like that. Get the fuck out of here. So then he heads to this corner store, and where a guy named Sal is working. And Sal agrees to let him park behind the fucking corner store. And he's like, go ahead. And then, so this is Saturday night that we're on now. This all happens. The motel thing is in the morning and this is later. So after he parks the truck in the back of this dude's convenience store, like 15 minutes later, Sal hears two gunshots off in the distance. And he's just kind of like, okay, that's weird, but... You know, we do kind of live out in the middle of nowhere. It's fucking Odessa. I don't know how bad it was then, but...
Yeah.
So 45 minutes later, Bill comes back all fucking frazzled again. And this time he has a large wad of cash.
Oh, yeah.
And he, like, pays for whatever service he got at the store, and he's like, thank you. And he's like, and he leaves.
Looks like Neil ended up having that cash after all.
Yeah, that's interesting. Or, yeah, where did he get that from? So now we meet our mysterious stranger who sounds like a Cecily Strong character, the one who's always smoking. Makache. You know what I'm talking about?
The motel resident.
Yeah, Cecily Strong plays this kind of like white trash character.
Oh yeah, I know.
On Weekend Update, and it's, dude, this voice is identical. It's so funny. So that's the Saturday. I guess later at night, he tells this lady that he done the job.
He did the job.
But she says done it. He said he done the job.
Saturday night, he came back and he said he'd done the job. He acted real nervous. And he acted especially nervous whenever he went over there to get something out of the truck that had a tarp on it.
How are you, Bill?
All right.
The next morning, another odd encounter.
Would it be okay if I did some laundry?
And I noticed that blood was on his shirt. Well, I didn't think anything about it because, you know, it just looked like maybe he cut himself and wiped it off on his shirt.
Why don't you call me and I'll show you how to use this washer.
So I told him, okay, you know, yeah, you can use the laundry.
You know what's funny is that these people were living out of the motel.
Yeah, it was just normal.
It was like a motel resident. It wasn't like a guest.
She
a
noticed-
guest is somebody who stays shortly and leaves.
So she also notices blood on the shirt, on Bill's shirt, and she says, maybe he cut himself. Maybe he cut himself and wiped it off on the shirt, and so I let him use the laundry. Maybe he cut himself. That's so good. So she let him use the laundry at a motel. I don't know why she needs to give permission. I don't know. And another neighbor or person at motel noticed that there was blood on the truck itself.
In the reenactment, I could have sworn the guy, the extra doing the reenactment, almost went as far as, like, licking it.
Licking it? I got the same thing. Yeah. I got that.
Whoa. Yep, that's blood. Fucking disgusting.
Yep, that's Odessa for you.
They'll taste the blood. So 8 hours later, is when the police get to the trash fire scene. They notice two pools of blood. They notice shotgun shell casings and waddings, which is, I don't know. Dan, what's a wadding?
I have no fucking clue because I don't fuck with shotguns.
Damn. Last time I fucked with a shotgun was when I was playing as the Terminator in Mortal Kombat 11. He uses a shotgun, and I kind of wish it was 90s Arnold, but I'm going to have to settle for newest movie, Old Man Arnold.
Oh, I thought you were talking about that time that you shotgunned, you know, two White Claws earlier today.
Yeah. I was going to say the last time I fucked with a shotgun was last summer at the pool.
Oh, beers. So the shotgun shell casings and wads and drag marks from the concrete parking lot to the concrete slab where he was lit on fire. The cop also stating that there's no doubt that the fatal shots happened in the parking lot, but this is Sunday now, the day before. What's weird, though, is that he shoots this body, hides it in the trash heap, and I guess it's not found fast enough. So, and the next day, he returns and lights it on fire and then gets out of there. And his motive for the murder is... what they think is just so he could sell the truck and get some money, which is pretty wild. And he doesn't, and we know he doesn't sell it. Like the wad of cash is kind of interesting to me.
So the term wad refers to
wadding
the component of a shotgun shell that is used to separate the shot from the powder. So contain the shotgun shot and provide a seal that prevents gas from blowing through the shot rather than propelling the shot out of the shotgun.
Okay.
Interesting.
That's what a shotgun wad is.
something that blew its wad. That's probably where that comes from.
Yeah.
So Neil's never seen again after Friday. And the whole Saturday thing happens with the gunshots, but no one ever sees Neil. And then Sunday is when they find the fiery body. So Friday to Saturday, where was Neil? What the fuck happened? Like,
yeah, was he like in the truck? Was he like tied up somewhere?
Trash heap.
I don't know.
Well, he doesn't go out to the trash heap until Saturday. Unless those gunshots were unrelated, and could be. It's fucking Odessa. So, but he leaves after the last visit to the motel. He fucking turns around and never comes back. His real name was Bill Blackwell, so he was lying about his name, and he served time for larceny and theft.
And what a cool outlaw name, Bill Blackwell.
It kind of is, yeah.
I mean, he wasn't completely lying. Like, he did keep his first name.
He only half lied. And he was wanted at the time, at this point, for violating his parole based on the theft and larceny and all that shit. So they believed he leaves Odessa and drives to Albuquerque because he does eventually sell the car, the truck, somewhere at like a junkyard or something. And then they just tell us, yeah, they caught him in Texas and he's serving 30 years. And that's all they give us.
Yeah. In Amarillo, it looks like. That's where they booked him. So his booking photo was. Oh, wow. He was arrested in North Carolina in 2006 under the name of John Downey, but was released before the police checked his fingerprints. But then again, he was arrested in Universal City, Texas in January of 2007. And in September 2008, he pleaded guilty for first-degree murder and was sentenced. Crazy. Wild.
Damn. So he pled guilty to this. Damn, that's crazy. So he didn't get caught until fucking... Damn, that's like 12 years later.
His full name is William Harrison Blackwell.
Damn. That guy's old. He gonna die in prison. Fuck this guy. But at the same time, I want to know more of the story.
Yeah, where was he? What was he up to?
Why did he kill this dude? I have an
idea. Let's commit a heinous crime.
Let's write him.
See if we can get locked up.
Let's just write him.
Oh, yeah, you could write him. I guess you could do that, too.
Why'd you do it? So this next case is a real wild one that I wish we had more information on.
This one bums me out so much.
Yeah, this is a missing persons case out of Gallup, New Mexico, which is Navajo territory. And we're talking about 9-year-old Navajo girl Anthonette Calladito. If cases like this interest you guys should listen to Truth or Consequences, which is a podcast out of New Mexico, hosted by a guy, a really cool guy named Eric Carter Landine, I think. And he does missing people specifically in New Mexico, and it kind of all started because of his brother was murdered when he was a toddler by their then stepfather or something along those lines. And what? He's never been charged for it. And they do a thing every year where they try to contact the DA and they try to reopen the case because
wait. His brother was a toddler or
his brother was a toddler and was apparently abused so bad that he died. And the stepdad was never charged for it. I think is the essential gist of it. But
that's so fucked.
Yeah. But that started his crusade and he's always on the news and stuff. It's much different than us, but he's a really nice guy. I've talked to him on the internet and stuff.
Oh, yeah, this guy's actually making a difference.
Yeah,
we're just kind of sitting around.
But yeah, true consequences, I think, is what it's called. True consequences, which is there's a name, a city called Truth or Consequences that has a pretty weird connection to the Toy Box Killer. So, yeah, there's lots of weird true crimey missing people and stories like that in
TRC.
In the Southwest area in general. And this is also, people are talking about missing and murdered Native women. Oh, it's been coming up a lot in the news. Like, a bunch of people's messages got, like, a bunch of people were spreading awareness about it's the hashtag is MMIW, so it's missing and murdered indigenous women. And, you know, every now and then, you know, people try to raise awareness of this because, you know, there's lots of cases. Like, there's this one podcast, Missing and Murdered is a podcast about, they focus on one girl, but it's about this long stretch of highway in Canada where just Native indigenous women's bodies were, like, dumped along the roadway and, you know, never properly investigated because of, you know, obvious racism and shit like that. But
yeah, because the media and stuff, they only actually investigate
when, like, JonBenet Ramsey's and shit.
Well, used to. I think it's definitely getting better.
We're talking about 70s and 80s here. But anyway, these people were, like, spreading awareness of this, and a bunch of their posts got taken down. Like, there was nothing offensive. It was just, like, you know, awareness of hashtag, like, anything that had hashtag MMIW was, like, taken down. Was this down.
On Twitter or on Facebook?
On Instagram, but I think it was just on Instagram. I'm not sure. But yeah, really weird. It might have been Twitter because I see a lot of people's stuff on Instagram from other social medias, but it's kind of weird. But yeah, this is, we're going to highlight one of these missing. We don't know if she's been murdered, but an indigenous girl, little girl. It's really sad.
Gallup, New Mexico, 140 miles west of Albuquerque, lies within what was for centuries the territory of a Navajo Indian nation. On April 6, 1986, this quiet community of 18,000 was rocked by the mysterious disappearance of a 9-year-old Navajo girl, Antoinette Calladito.
Mom and the sisters wake up like normal and they can't find her. And that's when, you know, the panic sets in. Neighbors and police looked around the area for 3 days and, you know, they canvassed the surrounding foothills and they couldn't find any trace of Antoinette. A year passes by with still nothing new when they get this, when 911 gets a terrifying call from a little girl. I'm actually going to play it for you guys here so you can hear it.
I listened to that tape over and over and over. And just by the way she says her last name and the way she screamed sent chills all over my body. Because a mother knows, and I know that was her.
It's a really creepy thing. And in the episode, they play it over and over, and you see the mom listening to it. And Antoinette with the TH is a very different name. But yeah, she says the way the little girl said her last name and the way she kind of screams at the end of the call when that person, it doesn't sound like the person says, like, who told you could use the phone or something?
Yeah, that's what they say.
It's creepy.
I can't imagine being a parent and having your child missing and then years later.
Well, like a year. Like, yeah. That is at this point, it was just 1 year, but
torture.
I know she's still a little girl. It's fucked up. So now we cut to 4 years later. When the FBI has released 2 computer enhanced images, which it just looks like they just took pictures of her and made her face longer.
Yeah, stretched her out.
And with this came a weird sighting that this waitress had in Carson City, Nevada. This is an interesting story. She waits on a table with 2 younger adults, right?
And
they looked disheveled. And they were also sitting also with them was a little girl between 13 and 14, the lady guest. And she kept doing this weird thing of dropping her fork. And when the waitress would pick it up, she would, like, grasp the waitress's hand, like, hold it. And then, you know, it was a little weird, but she just kind of, you know, went on with her day, didn't think much of it. Until she's cleaning up the table after they leave. And on a napkin that's under her food plate, it was written, please help me call the police, was written on the napkin. And by that time, you know, they're long gone, so it couldn't really do anything.
Yeah, that's terrifying too, regardless of if it's connected or not.
Right, yeah, that's another interesting thing. It could have just been some other girl in distress. now it's another year later. It's been 5 years now when they go and talk to the sister, Wendy, again, see if they can get anything else out of her. And then she tells them about the night, and she says she was too scared to tell the story originally, but she says that someone knocked on the door. Antoinette answered, and but only after somebody said, "It's your Uncle Joe." She was weary at first, smartly.
So she really did have an Uncle Joe, which is why she opened the door.
Yeah. So when Antoinette opens the door, this person grabs her and takes her to what the little girl said was a brown van while she's like kicking and screaming. And she says she just didn't tell her mom because she didn't want to get in trouble. It's just crazy. It's like fucking selfish little kid.
You're 5 years old.
Yeah. Like that. That's some pertinent information. And it's really annoying. It's your fault.
Yeah. That's very annoying.
Yeah. Because I was like, remembering, I was like, she wanted to protect her mom because her mom was crying. And I was like, oh, wait, she just literally says because she didn't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
But I guess that is probably the only thing you'd be frightened about when you're that young.
As a five-year-old, you mean, you don't know.
And the investigator believes her story. He doesn't think that she was lying about this. And they do say that Penny's brother-in-law would have been the Uncle Joe that they were talking about and that he had an alibi and was not a suspect. Whatever that means. They think that it's not necessarily a family member, but someone that definitely knows the family. Because if they would have known that this little girl has an Uncle Joe, they would have to have some sort of no. But I mean, it's pretty generic name. But I mean, it's a little weird and specific.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So they actually end up going to a Navajo medicine woman, and she does a centuries old traditional tribal ceremony that's in English translates to the crystal ritual. And basically the purpose of this is it's supposed to contact the spirit of a missing person. And with this, the medicine woman tells them that she's most likely still alive and somewhere in the Southwest and that she might have a child, and that she's being held against her will and stuff. And some of the stuff that she said coincided with the police investigation. So, and I guess they just don't want to be too specific with it.
For giving away pertinent information to the case.
This case is completely still unsolved. Like,
they still have no idea where she is. No idea if that phone call was real. No idea. They got nothing. No leads.
The only thing I was able to find out was that the mom died in 1999.
Oh, that's...
And she pretty much drank herself to death.
Oh. And her younger sister was, like, in and out of, I guess, like, the juvenile system for being, like, into gangs and drugs and all this other stuff, but has since then gotten her life around and...
Is, like, happy with kids and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so such a bummer.
So it just destroyed this family. God,
I did a general search and there was like, that's all I could find. There was no like updates of like any additional sightings or nothing.
I mean, I think she has a Wikipedia page that has some interesting things, but yeah, that's pretty much what we gleaned from it. Super sad. All right. The last case is this little quick lost loves about these, this cute retired couple that lived in Florida.
They were a retired couple living on a fixed income.
Yeah.
That went on unsolved mysteries for a not so humble brag.
Well, I think they were being pretty humble about
it. They were completely humble. They,
I feel like they just really wanted to like say, they really just wanted to say thank you.
The husband was a firefighter who had a heart attack, so he had to retire. And the wife was actually a cancer survivor, and that had actually emptied their accounts quite a bit. So they were pretty much struggling.
Yeah. His name was Russell Johnson, and I forget her name. Hold on.
The Johnsons.
The Johnsons.
So this story takes place in winter 85. Super warm and humid day, and Russell's working in his garage when his wife comes in kind of startled. And she said that there's like a man outside and kind of frightened her. So he opens the garage and talks to the man. And the man says that he wants to know if he can do some work for some food. And, you know, they make him a sandwich. They had just gotten some stuff from the grocery store. So they were happy to help. And they gave him a glass of iced tea. Like we were saying, at this time they were pretty broke, you know, but they had, you know, they could offer him some sandwiches, you know.
He asks for, he doesn't really ask for anything. He asks for, like you said, he asks for work, for some money.
Yeah.
Or for food. And they end up giving him some sandwiches and some iced tea, and they just kind of kick it outside for a little bit.
Yeah.
Which in Florida, it's hot, man. Kicking it outside in a, on a patio and some folding chairs.
He tells him that he's from Houston, and Russell can tell that the man's not a bum, is what he says. You know, he was very well spoken and stuff. He also chuckles when he says that he had about three sandwiches before he, before he said anything. And after that, he was pretty much too tired to talk anyway. So he just kind of sat up there like you said, and just kept him company. And then he started to leave, and they kind of scrounged together like $5 in loose change and, you know, just some stuff they had. He estimated that he gave him around $5, but he had some change, and there was like a couple loose bucks and some other change that his wife ran out and got. And, yeah, they were just like, you know, get yourself another meal later. You probably, you know, you need this more than we do. And they actually did actually need it.
Yeah. And they, like you said, he wasn't a bum. He was just down on his luck.
Yeah. And he really appreciated, like, the money, I think, was another thing, like the food and the kindness. But when these people gave him money, his face kind of lit up and stuff. And then he said, God bless you. You know, and they said a very strange feeling came over them, and they felt all nice and warm. And then they kind of went outside. They went around the house to their balcony so they could wave bye to him.
And then he shrunk and grew wings and flew away.
Oh, shrunk and actually
grew? No, that's when he shat on their lawn.
Oh, that's why they couldn't see him?
Because he was shitting on the lawn.
Like, we looked everywhere, but it was just too high, and he was just bent over.
All those sandwiches.
And they're like, yeah, they're just like, you know, he was nowhere to be seen. They even
why
went outside.
Did you have to eat three?
They even went outside and looked around, and they were like, all they saw was just a large human shit on their lawn.
Gene, did a bear come through here? Was this an alligator? It is Florida.
Oh, my God. But in all seriousness, they went outside again to look, you know, around, look down the street, and even in the reenactment. By the way, these guys both take a star turn because they play themselves.
Yeah, it was great. I liked it.
And you hear them in the reenactment say, like, are we losing it?
Mm-hmm.
So this guy essentially disappeared, or probably not, but it's cool. And they joked that they had been visited by an angel, ha 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 ha. And then 10 days before Christmas, they get a check for $500, and all it says is, love your Christian friends, and it's just like a typical little, you know, Christmas card with like a little tree, season's greetings, whatever. And this,
but that's not all.
And this money really...
There's more.
Yeah, the check for $500. I said that right.
But more.
And she was crying, and she, you know, they really needed that movie. He explains that it was quite the opportune time for them because they didn't have much.
He really needed that movie?
Yeah, I heard that too. I didn't know if I was losing it.
Damn, I didn't know the guy was an inspiring actor. Glad he booked it.
Inspiring actor? Did you say inspiring actor?
All right, I fucked up.
Damn, you guys both screwed up.
Oh, God. We don't know words.
I just can't get over the fact that, like, Dan pointed out that he could have been shitting on their lawn.
Could have just been shitting on the lawn. You don't know.
Yeah. I mean, he did have three sandwiches.
Smoky style from Friday. Like,
he's gonna behind have to a shit bush. Somewhere. So they take the check to the bank, and just, you know, they gave it to the banker being like, we're not even sure if this is real. We don't know who it came from. And they were like, yeah, sure. It's good. How do you want it? And they put it in their account, and they asked their friends and family, and nobody admitted to it. And, for 5 whole years, every Christmas, they got a check for $500. And, they want to say thank you. They assume it's the man that they helped. But it's the only thing he even says he's not sure they're connected. He's like, we don't really know if there's a connection.
What if it was just like someone sending the checks to like the wrong house?
Oh, imagine.
5 years in a row?
Well, we would like to say thank you to somebody. It was a gift well received.
Did the Johnsons experience a Christmas miracle? Perhaps. Or perhaps they simply experienced the everyday miracle of kindness, which is never out of season.
I don't know. But yeah, it's probably God or something. I don't know. What's the answer? Super drunk fucking rich guy goes on a bender and has nothing, and then someone gives him a sandwich, and then when he goes back to the big city of Orlando, he just starts sending them checks on their birthday.
Checks. I think it's going to be – I have my money on Asian Harry Potter.
Oh, again? Yeah. He wasn't even – dude, so I feel like we're like – are we doing a racist? Because St. John Newman is very un-Asian.
No, but the actor looked Asian, and then the boy did specify in his dream that he was surrounded by Asian children. I don't think we're being, like,
culturally insensitive.
Yeah, no. There's a reason for our dumb jokes.
Yeah. And the wig that kid was wearing was fucking awful.
Oh, dear. Oh my God, it was rough.
And when he says,
"Everything's gonna be alright,"
it's terrifying. But anyway, I digress. Merry Christmas, guys.
Your soul.
Merry Christmas in May.
Your Chucky soul is mine. Woo! Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. Stack Pack, stacking and packing, and we'll see you next week. Yeah, Merry Christmas. Next week is the start of 1993, so that'll be fun.
And it's not Christmas.
Mm-hmm. You can listen to this one on Christmas. It'll be fun. Even though it's not nothing really Christmassy besides Robert Stack talking behind a Christmas tree. And some of them, you know,
and the Johnsons getting money during Christmas.
Yeah,
for 5 years.
Oh, and that super sick boy got really sick on Christmas. So let's celebrate.
He's better now.
Anyway, thanks so much. We love you. I'm David. That's Eli, and that's Dan.
And I'm Dan.
Thank you, boys. For every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth. Perhaps that someone is listening. And perhaps that someone is you. Good night.